This is one in a series of podcasts from the Hyatt Webb Conference in Austin, 2011.
Good morning, folks. Thank you. I hope you're all exhausted. If you're not, you're doing it wrong. So today, I'm going to tell you a little bit about Cornell's Digital Well, and there are going to be two things which I hope you're going to take away. The first one is obviously the product, which is a product we're working with legal to open source, so might be one you might one day use. But second of all, to share a little bit about our thought process that we went through to do this. But before I start my presentation, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions and then tell you a little story about Alice, the marketing executive. First of all, how many people here are involved in web marketing? So in rewriting stories, you're creating images, you're doing something like that. In other words, not IT stuff, but web marketing side of things. Okay. So the reverse, how many of you are involved in the IT side of things? Okay, so it's about a 50-50 split. I'm going to try and use that to gauge sort of how much to talk about each thing. Okay, so I'm going to tell you a little story. So Alice and Bob's her boss. So Alice is the overworked marketing executive. So she, and I'm going to use the well to tell you the story. Okay, so she gets a call from, she works for College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, which is where I work. And she gets a call from her boss. She says, you have to come up with some news about the dean. The dean happens to be Catherine Bush. She's the dean of CALS at Cornell University. Now, Alice is new, so she doesn't really know what goes on at the university. And she sort of knows who the dean is, but she never met the dean. She's really sort of a person who just wants to get along and get stuff done. And she's got a lot of things to do, so she needs to get this done quickly. So what she does, she goes to the well, and she searches let me see if I can open up a new one. So she searches on this, and she searches for the dean's name. Internet is always a bit iffy in this place, so we'll see how it goes. And she comes up with a whole bunch of stories all about the dean. So here's one, she addresses the Colombian government, and here's an image. So she looks and she says, well, that image is no use on its own. You know, let me see the provenance of the image. You know, let's see what it's about. Let's see who it is and what it is. And she sees an article where she can look at the article. She can download the article if she wants to. I'm not going to open it. She can open it in her document. She can edit it. She can add tags. So she can look at it. She also says, oh, it's got 5 stars. Maybe people have rated this as a good article. So I'll take a look at that. And you know what? I'm actually going to take this picture and I'm going to associate it with this article. So I'm relating these two articles. I'm going to say they're together. They're both about Catherine Boer. And I can look at this article now and I can see that he has a related image. So I can say this was about her trip and this is about the article that somebody wrote about this trip. And I can take these things and I can add them to, I need to share them with my boss. I need to share this information that I've found. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to drag them across to a project box and add them to the project box, which I can then share with other people. You know, I'm not going to add that one. So this is an easy way to really get in touch with a whole ton of information. What I'm going to explain to you today is a little bit about this. And a little bit how none of this information that you see has actually stored in this digital well. It's actually stored somewhere else. Because one of the first rules of adding or creating a repository for content is don't give another thing they have to add stuff to. I mean, who the heck's got time to add it to the, you know, to the databases they already have, right? So that is the story of Alice and how she finds information in a hurry for her boss. So, let me go back and tell you what I'm going to talk about. So, that was the introduction. I'm going to talk about the three problems that we encountered. I'm going to talk about the state of the art, a little bit of a touch on repositories. Does anybody know what a repository is? How many people know what a repository is? About half of you know what a repository is. How it works and some lessons learned that we can take home. So, this is what it looks like when most people get asked to get marketing information. They say, hey, roll up, And by the way, you've got this job to do. And here, in addition to all that, here's the stuff you have to do. You know, Alice has to go and get an article while she's doing other things. So what she does is she runs away to find people to help her get the article. Let's go and see, you know, let's go and tap into our group of people to help her. So she goes and looks for the people to help her. And they're all busy with their jobs too. So she doesn't always find people to help her. You expect her to sort of make your own way and do your own job. So it's difficult. So we need a place. We need a central place where somebody who's new knows to go to find information. I mean, we have Cornell, we have like 2 photo repositories. We have the news articles. We have like a list of Twitter feeds. We have a ton of stuff. And if you're new or if you're in a job where these things change a lot, you might not even know to look in those places. You might not even know they exist. You might not even know to go to the press office's repository of information to find articles and press releases, or to know to go to university photography. We have a photography branch, and look in their repository. And even if you do go there, you might not know how to find the stuff. You might not have a login. I mean, you have to get a login to like these 8 or 9 different repositories. So it would be so much easier if there was one place you could go to. At one place gives you access to all those things. It gives you a reach into those organizations. And that's what the well is. So let's talk a little bit about the 3 problems that we encountered when people were trying to find information. The first one is the information is blurry. Okay, this is from September, from CNN. Mishandling of job speech timing blurs White House message. Okay, I guess the White House is getting a lot of blurred messages these days. They're facing a lot of pressure from other parts of the political spectrum. So, you know, there are people trying to blur their message. But even if they're not, blurring of a message happens a lot. And I'll give an example. We had president of our university made 2 announcements within about a week of each other. The first announcement is that Cornell is going to spend top dollar, spare no expense to recruit top faculty. That was the first message. The second message was that there are going to be significant layoffs on the staff. Now, those 2 messages were sent at very different times. First, the message from the layoffs was sent, and then a week later, the message we're recruiting top faculty was sent. Unfortunately, the top faculty recruitment message was sent by the president. He stood up and he spoke about it. So that message propagated out into the world very, very quickly. And it overtook the other message. So some people heard the message in the other order, right next to each other. Oh, by the way, you staff member working out in a part of Cornell, we're going to make layoffs to you, but we're spending lots of money somewhere else. You know, that's the message. It didn't really work. It was a blurring of a message. And I'll explain how that message propagation rate is kind of an important factor in how you do business as a marketing person. And that can, you know, blurs messages, it creates problems. The second problem that you get is inaccuracy. Now, this is a physical inaccuracy, but as messages get transferred from one organization to another organization to another organization and get reported on by the central organization, they lose accuracy. And if you're an academic, you've got a very strong vested interest in use words very precisely. You can't just substitute it with another word because it sounds nice. They really have very specific meanings a lot of the time. And the other thing is, things are hard to find. Do you ever know what that is? That's the ivory-billed woodpecker. There was a huge announcement, oh, we found the ivory-billed woodpecker. Well, you know, nobody found the ivory-billed woodpecker. People were out in the swamps in Virginia, I think it was, North Carolina, for months at a time. That was an interesting insight. So the information is hard to find. You don't even know what is out there for you to reach because there's no central organization. There's no person saying these are the things you can connect to find the information you want. Are these problems other people experience? I'm just kind of curious. I'm seeing a lot of nodding. Okay, so I'm not completely making this stuff up. So now I want to talk a little bit about 3 concepts. Message reach time, which I've touched on, content reuse, and location disinterest. Message reach time. People who get the news, imagine a big, like the world is flat kind of organization, a big flat organization. We're the central organization a lot of the time. We're the university administration, and we're putting out the news. And we want to put out a coherent message to the world about what the university is saying and about the research the university is doing. But the people who make the news the scientists and the academics and the researchers, they're out on the periphery, right? And they sort of do something newsworthy. We have to go and find it, or they tell us, and it comes back. And there's the centralized reporting. There's this huge gap. There's just not a, it's not clearly easy to transition that gap. The cool stuff happens here, but the ability to deal with the cool stuff happens here. And that, I mean, it's a very common dichotomy, right? You get this, the ability to deal with something is on the one end of the spectrum, but the thing's happening on the other end of the spectrum. And it's the same with, you know, if you solving problems generally, problems are solved in the locally, but solutions to problems are organized centrally. So that's a bit of a problem that we have to deal with. The next one is content reuse. We're expected at Cornell, if you're in marketing, to reach out or to compete, if you like, on all forms of media all the time. Okay, that's the message that we received. Now, we don't have time to write content for each one of those things all the time. It's just impossible. You can't create tailored content for all those things all the time. So you have to come up with a solution. You have to come up with content that is canned, in a sense, sort of, a, you know, if you were a politician, it would be talking points. You have to come up with content that can be repurposed easily. And if the content can't be repurposed easily, you have to write. I mean, that's an effort, right? You have to write a new piece of content. You risk blurring, you know, you risk reinterpreting the message, which might be wrong. So it's very difficult to do. But we're expected to be competitive. We're expected to reach out to people and give them the news in the form they want. If they do Twitter, we need to, you know, give them a way to do it through Twitter. If they do listen to the radio, we need to do a way to do that. So the third problem is, it's not completely related to the slide, is what they call location disinterest. So this is a trick question. Does anybody know where on their hard drive their email is stored? Like, what sector of your hard drive your email is stored? Okay, you know what you don't know? You don't care. Who cares? It doesn't freaking matter. Okay, it doesn't make any difference. And the same thing is with information, with photographs, with content. I mean, who cares where it's stored, right? It doesn't make any darn difference. The only thing that matters is, can I find it? Most importantly, can I find it again? I found it the first time. It's like the Google search. You go and you find the Google search. That's great. You try and search the same thing again, you're hosed. You know, if it's a big piece of news, you're fine. If it's not, it's very, very difficult to do. Finding information again is tough. So that what matters is, can you reach out and get that information? So in the digital world, we did not strive to create a tool that is a repository that you put information into. Okay? What we did was connect to the information that already exists out there. And that was based on a realization that the mechanism that you use to access information usually is the same mechanism that you use to put information in. You use the same sort of interface. You know, that doesn't have to be the case. It's in fact unnecessary to have the interface be the same. You can put information in through one interface, usually the native interface for whatever app you're using, you know, your photograph app or your news app or whatever it is, and you can retrieve it through a completely different interface, an interface that's optimized for retrieval. And it's interesting that most people who design interfaces design them as if those two sort of things are somewhat symmetrical. Hey, you have to add information, you get to retrieve information, but in fact, people retrieve information thousands of times more frequently than they add information. So as an example, Wikipedia, millions of people use Wikipedia. More than 90% of Wikipedia articles are contributed by less than 10,000 people. Okay? Very few people contribute to Wikipedia. And as a result, Wikipedia is kind of optimized to get information out. I mean, it's pretty well done, so it's easy to add as well, but it's very easy to find information. So I think that's an important concept to get. They don't have to be the same. So let's talk about repositories. So a repository, very simply, is a place to store information that where the metadata for the information is tightly bound or associated with the actual information itself. If you're a librarian, please don't shoot me. That's a very rough definition, but it'll work for our purposes. The most important point is that the metadata is very important. You have to associate metadata with the data itself. And we found that some of our repositories didn't do that. I mean, they associated some metadata, like who took the photograph, but they didn't associate the metadata that counted. So an example that we found when people came up to find information was they wanted to get a photograph. They needed a photograph, and they had to get a photo credit. Okay? Who was in the photograph? A photo credit. Who's in the photo? What were they doing? So that they can write a little byline under the photo, and do they have permission to use the photograph? It took a week. It took a week to find that information. To go, to get a release for the photo, to find out who the people are. You know, sometimes it's listed, sometimes it's not. What are they doing? Can I use the photo in this context? It's not that easy. It took somebody some, it's crazy. You should be able to have a document stored in one place that you don't care about, which has that information about, you know, a narrative about the photograph. And you should be able to have the photograph, and those two things should be associated with each other. Like in the demo this morning, I associated two pieces of information. So that a person who's a news person working centrally, they don't even, I mean, we're a big university, they don't even know who these people are half the time. So that they can go and look at that photo and say, oh, that's Catherine Burr, she's talking about this, she's in Colombia, she's doing this, I can write a byline now, and I can add a byline. And we actually, you know, get people to write the byline in the description. So what we're doing is tying into existing repositories, tying into this and adding metadata if it doesn't exist, or harvesting the metadata if it is. Another important design consideration we looked at is do not ask people to enter information that you can find out yourself. Okay? It's coming up for tax time, right? You fill in your tax form, you have to write your social security number at the top of every page. And it's freaking annoying. Why write the same information five times? Okay, it turns out they have a good reason. Okay, so that they lose one page. But for the most part, asking people to enter information more than once is just annoying. I mean, we're all busy people here. And so things like who the person who's adding the information, who's uploading it, what time is it uploaded, what department at the university do they work for, what's their job title? You can get all that information by looking at the university directory. Do not ask people to enter it. It's just annoying. So what you can find, be intelligent about how you find information so that people don't have to do this. Okay. We looked at two existing repositories. This is talking a little bit about the design process that we went through. Anyone heard of DSpace or Fedora Commons? You've heard of them. Okay, a couple of people. These are actually fantastic products. I'm definitely not going to diss them, but they're really nice products. They're designed out of the library space. So for IT people, it's kind of interesting that a lot of stuff that we're sort of wrestling with as we deal with the internet, librarians thought of 20 years ago. You know, okay, they thought about it to do with card catalogs, but they still thought about it. You know, they have solutions for this stuff. So we should go and ask the librarians. Those two products are very nice products. The user interfaces were too hard. Simply too difficult to use. I see a lot of people nodding their heads. I mean, it's the rule for us was if you cannot muddle your way through the interface, if you can't sort of look at it and kind of like, you know, mess around a little bit and kind of find your way, it's too hard. Well, Fedora Commons actually doesn't have a user interface. They expect you to sort of get some other one that you can kind of download and add on yourself. So that's why that was too hard. DSpace was too hard for us because it's optimized for academics, optimized for academic publications. It has a lot of information. It has this kind of old school stuff, you know, where you go to this, you go to a screen, you type in a screen, you know, you type in all the stuff, you press submit it, you upload it. It's really painstaking. We have drag and drop. We have all those features. We have an interface that might be an interface that a librarian who uses information every day knows how to use, but it's not an interface that somebody who's familiar with the web, who's searching for information, knows how to use. So when I say too hard, I want to be a little bit careful, because I mean, actually DSpace is a great product, and Cornell uses DSpace, and they also use Fedora, but they use them in very specific contexts. And this broad, like, appealing to marketing people who are busy, who need to get something, it's just not possible. It's not easy to do. Also, from a technical point of view, Fedora, if you're curious, Fedora is very good at retrieving large records, like books. It's extremely poor at retrieving lots of small requests, like little snippets of information, little sentences. It's designed to retrieve manuscripts, you know, do proper searches on some manuscripts. So that's how I feel navigating most repositories. That's one of the most watched videos on YouTube, believe it or not. It's to the tune of something from Pulp Fiction. So if you go and look for the cat, you'll find that. It's just, gotta love it. but they're just too difficult. They're just too hard to use. And for somebody like me, I mean, I'm an intelligent guy, right? I mean, I hope. And if I'm finding it difficult, it's not because I don't. It's not because I'm stupid. It's because I don't wish to apply my brain to that. You know, my brain cycles are valuable, and I want to use them to solve the problem I want to solve. I don't want to use them to solve your problem because you didn't think about it. No, you know. So here's what we did. I want to take a little sort of segue, step out of the one conversation that I'm having to tell you the narrative of the well, and tell you a little bit briefly about what we did. The first thing we did is we didn't ask people what they wanted, okay? Because we don't care. They don't know what they want. And the reason they don't know what they want is we find it very difficult for people who are, for people to envision a future that is not the current future. How to envision a future that is different from today is hard. So it's not a surprise that people find that difficult. So what we did was we posed the problem to people. We said, this is a problem. Tell me a little story about this problem. Tell me a story about the problem. And we drew up these character studies, okay? So Joe is a director of communications in engineering college. He needs to have access to many communications materials. These are the things that are important to Joe. Okay, we wrote up these little stories because asking people was just a complete waste of time. They just don't know what they want. So we asked communicators, six communicators around Cornell, to draw up these little stories. And they wrote, I think they did a great job. And you know, it just tells the story of Joe came here from a much smaller university. He's adjusting to the fact that a lot of communication effort carried around campus are generated by admission directors who are not aware of his interest or his views. A little story about that. And it listed the features that impress him and the characteristics of a successful solution. What does a successful solution look like? Not what buttons do I press, what can I do with it? Tell me what I can do with it. Okay, we'll work out the button. Okay. Then we characterized these. We had these, so these are the names of the people right up here that we invented. And we looked at all the features the people listed. We extracted the features. We didn't ask people to extract the features. We extracted the features. These are the features that in that little narrative, when we read the narrative, this is what we came across as a feature. You know, clearly defined print and web resources. Somebody wanted that. Okay. Now, again, we're not asking them, we're not listing this and saying, check if you want this. And that's an important little sort of psychological trick, right? Because people are like, oh, I want that. But you don't even know what it is. What do you mean you want it? You know, we haven't even invented it yet. So we extracted these ourselves from the narrative. It was more work, no question. But in my opinion, it was a much better way to go about solving the problem than to say to people, here's a checklist of stuff. Okay. However, but ease of use triumphed everything. Okay. If it is not easy to use, you're wasting your time. Put at least half your effort in ease of use. And ease of use is defined not by what your developers want, it's defined by what your audience want. Okay? Your audience tell you what's easy to use. If they say it's hard to use, don't say to them, oh, no, you just have to go here and do this. No. They said it, they've made their point, right? You don't have to go and explain to them, because when somebody's using it and sitting it, they don't have somebody to explain to them, you know? You might be able to explain to one person, you can't explain to hundreds or thousands. Okay? So, a little lesson about ease of use. Okay? Has to be simple. That's the remote I want. My wife does the TV controlling in our house because I just don't know how to do it. It's just too hard. Okay. I do want to talk to you a little bit about the importance of good design as well. Segue about good design. That's a bad design. The problem with bad designs is they stick around. Bad designs stick around. So this is, to me, the greatest example. I'm a foreigner. I'm not from here. This is a stovetop kettle. This is an electric kettle, okay? In every other part of the world, people use electric kettles, okay? They are manifestly better, more efficient, and safer, okay? No question. Electric kettles are better, more efficient, and safer. They switch off automatically, okay? These kettles, stovetop kettles, don't do that, okay? And they use gas or ranges, which use more electricity, okay? Most people in the United States use stovetop kettles. They don't use electric kettles. Canadians use electric kettles. You know, pardon? Some people do use one. They are penetrating. Interestingly enough, in the 10 years that I've been here, they have penetrated a little bit. But it is interesting, the point I want to make here is that designs that are manifestly better, that are absolutely provably better on almost every metric, the only metric this is not better is counter space. Okay? Use a little bit more counter space to have an electric kettle. That's the only, in every other metric, an electric kettle is better. People continue to not use it. It's hard to change people's preferences. It's really, really difficult. And I mean, if something like this, which you can physically feel it, is difficult, imagine how much more difficult it is to change people's preferences when you're using a web product that they may have to use for their job or something. It's just hard. And I want to sort of caution you, as I'm sure you already know, but caution you again, you know, I know you think it's hard, but it's even harder than you think it is to get people to change people's preferences. So that's the one, if you take home one, what do they call it, one little sort of bon mot, what do they call the thing? Pardon? One little nugget from this conversation, it's even harder to change people's preferences than you think it is. It's really crazy. Here's an example. I mean, this is what it is. So don't necessarily even try. I mean, just work with people who it works for. So now I want to talk a little bit about the well. So this is a complicated diagram. You don't have to look at it, and I'm going to go back and show you the product again, show you a demo of the product. But the important point here, the take-home point, is that there's this decoupling. I've talked about decoupling. Everyone nodding? I've talked about decoupling? Separating the adding the information place from the retrieving? Great, that's another good take-home. Okay, I've talked about decoupling. Go in and find things, expecting people to add information to another place, ain't gonna happen. I'm telling you now, it ain't gonna happen. They won't even add it to the first place, you know? They won't even upload their work to one central place. They're certainly not gonna upload it to two. Okay, it just ain't gonna happen. So you have to find ways to go and fetch that content. Your system needs to go and ferret out that content itself. So what we do is we have the Chronicle is the newspaper, the Cornell Chronicle. It goes and fetches the articles. This is a streaming service, videos. It goes and fetches the videos. It goes every night. It goes and looks, hey, what videos have been uploaded? Let's go and add those videos automatically, index them basically, and make them findable. You know, let's go and look in the press releases. And this diagram here, I just talked about having an API. There needs to be a way for programs to talk to software as well. And there's a very interesting article actually that came out about a week ago by this guy called Steve Yeager, who works for Amazon. Has anyone ever heard of this rant? It's called you go and Google Steve Yeager's rant. He talks about the difference between Amazon and Google. He says Amazon sucks at everything, you know, but there's one thing they don't suck at. They make information findable, you know, and that makes up for all the other suckiness. So making information findable programmatically is really important. So let's go back to a little presentation here. So the first thing we did when we designed this is we had I have a sort of a design principle that form follows function. Anyone ever heard of that? Form follows function? You've heard of that? So if form doesn't follow function, what does it follow? Anyone know what? Well, if form doesn't follow function, form follows something else, right? Fashion. Form follows fashion. Okay? It's whatever's fashionable. We're not that interested in what is fashionable. We're interested in what is functional. Okay? Form follows function. And what we have is this tool, sort of a realization that we came to is that going from one page, navigating from one page to another page to do something, this sort of, oh, there's an add screen and an edit screen, kind of old hat. You don't have to do that. This entire piece of software is presented to somebody on one page. This is it. This is the entire application. Okay, it's all here. And very simply, what it is a little message board at the top here, but it's a list of, whoops, my mouse is running down the hill. It's a list of some, you know, you can find people, a list of items. This list of items is actually infinite in length. Okay, it indexes the entire repository. As you scroll down, you can add more items on the bottom and more items on the bottom, more items on the bottom. So, and what it does is it ranks. Every single one of these items is ranked. It's ranked individually for every single person using the product. Okay? Looks at, you know, what have they ranked as important? What have they tagged? What have they starred? You know? What have they done? And it ranks all the pieces of content that it knows about individually for that person all the way to the bottom. So the highest ranking stuff is at the top and the lowest ranking stuff is at the bottom. This is because we came across this problem, which of course is kind of commonly known about now, but you know, 2 years ago wasn't. It's sort of, how do you know stuff's good? Well, you know stuff's good when people tell you it's good. Like, that's how you know stuff's good. Reputation. Where did everyone go and eat last night? Most of the time you had a conversation with your buddies about where to eat. We went to this Iron Cactus. Who went to the Iron Cactus last night? Hey, I thought the Iron Cactus was pretty cool. But there was this sort of iron something else, and you know, people were having, it was a very interesting little negotiation going on in the front in the front of the hotel. And if you're a sort of student of human behavior, that was kind of fun, actually, to watch that going on. But you ask your friends. You ask your friends about stuff. Well, one of the ways you can ask your friends is you can look at ratings. Okay, friends rate stuff, and that helps you, you know, see what it is. It's pretty obvious, right? You can look at tags. And if I scroll over here, you will be able to see. There we are. Okay. So it pops up with how many items are tagged with each of these things. Okay. Well, it turns out when you've got like 200,000 pieces of content in this well, you get a lot of stuff tagged with the same tags. So you can make your own tags. Okay. You can make your own ratings. Very quickly, you can look at people. Okay. So there are 189 people using this. The important thing to note is that's about as many people as we expect to use this product. It's a product for marketing professionals. It's not available for free. Anybody can't go and look, free as in beer. Anyone can't go and look at this and see what's in here. This is half-baked stuff, right? You don't want the whole world peering into your marketing process, you know? You want them to see the nice finished stuff at the end. So, you know, you have to be able to log in, and there are about 220 people with a communications job title at Cornell, somewhere around there. I don't know if anyone at Cornell knows a better number than that. So there are 189 people who've used it. Again, they didn't have to go and log in. When they went to this and they typed in their credentials, for the first time, they said, oh, you're new, I'll add you. Okay, they didn't have to do anything explicit to add, they just had to visit it. So it looks at those people. Also, I can follow them. If I'm a manager or I'm a person who is writing news articles, one of the problems that you might find is, how do you find stuff that doesn't exist yet? I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but I mean, people do it all the time, right? How do you find something that doesn't exist? Well, if you have a photographer, your favorite photographer, you know he's going to produce a photo shoot for you, okay, next week. What you can do is you can follow the photographer, okay? Follow means make more important. You can follow this person. So when they do produce the photos and upload them, you'll see them at the top of your feed, right? Because you know they're coming. So you can follow somebody and track what they're doing. You know, if you're a boss and you want to see what your employees are doing, I guess you can do that too, right? And we can also look at, so the units. This is, there are 78 units who use this. Again, you can, nobody entered this information. This is automatically gathered by the system, okay? So that gives you a way to do it, and there's also, I don't know if this is kind of interesting to you, but there's a whole lot of reports that you can do, which I don't want to go into. I don't want to spend too much time on this. I want to spend more time on the lessons. Is that a good place to spend time rather than this? Great. Okay, so not. Okay, so let's go back to the PowerPoint. Okay. I do want to leave some time for questions, if there are any. So, thank you. So, I do want to quickly go into the lessons learned. I've told you what I think are the most important lessons, but here are some lessons. Okay, you all know what this is, right? Kiss, kiss, keep it simple. Right. That's the most important thing. I mean, simplicity is everything, right? Most of the interfaces that we see are complicated, whether it's your car dashboard or whether it's, you know, Amazon, follow the rule of that every good complicated idea started off as a good simple idea. Okay? No good complicated idea started out as a good complicated idea, because those are bad ideas, it turns out. They got progressively more complicated as people became used to them. And it's interesting when you see people not familiar with the internet, look at it now, the pages are so rich, they just don't know how to use it. You know? You know, you get some old people who don't use the internet. They can't start. So simplicity is everything. The other one is, you know, you can keep all the information on one page. You can with Ajax. You can with all the other presentations we're going to. You can put everything on one page. And if you can't, you're designing it wrong. You know, you need to go back and think about how to design it. And the other sort of sub part of that is, often your users don't know what they're talking about. I mean, they think they know what they're talking about, but they really don't. If there's one thing that Apple, which is not my favorite company, if there's one thing that Apple did right, the first thing they did when Steve Jobs came, he fired all the UI experts. He just got rid of them. He said, they don't know what they're talking about. And by and large, he was right, actually, which is interesting. And the other thing is, changing the way people work is extremely difficult. It is so difficult that even if you produce perfect product, you know, some sort of Euclidean perfect product, it's very hard to change the way people work. You have to do it through evangelism. It's just a challenge. If anyone has a solution to that, you know, bring it on, because I'm not sure I have one. That is pretty much all that I have to tell you, okay? And the other thing is, some things are predictable. This is kind of a fun slide, okay? If you want to get up and leave, we're kind of done for most of the presentation, but I thought this was a fun slide to put up, okay? This is a Google search frequency on what is Yom Kippur, okay? Well, guess when Yom Kippur falls in the year, you know? A lot of things that you think are not knowable are actually very easy to find out. They're very easy to know. And just one final one. This is one final thing that I did, which I think really worked for me. It worked for me to get funding, if nothing else. I gave my VP, my boss, talking points, if you like. I gave him every couple of weeks, I gave him like a printout, and I said, this is what I want you to say about the well. The digital well, this project that we're doing that nobody's seen, this is what I want you to say. And I gave him a talking point, and I said, repeat these words, basically. And he sort of laughed and kind of like, yeah. But he repeated them. You know, it kind of worked. It was great. And he's got much, you know, he's got 10 times the evangelizing power that I've got, right? So him saying the words and keeping on message really made a difference. And I sort of learned this from politics, right? You know, you go on the Sunday morning talk shows, and every single person is saying not similar words, exactly the same words. They've obviously prepared it, you know. Well, we can learn from that. So I gave my boss, and actually this applies to any project you're doing. I don't know about what your marketing organization's attention span is, but my marketing organization's attention span was 2 to 3 months, max. And that's about how long they could get. Anything after that, yeah, whatever, you know, go to something else. You know, some other crisis has happened. So to keep people on track was very hard. So I gave them these talking points, these little sort of printed out, not on the web, but actually printed out little 4 or 5 points, and it really worked. So that was kind of fun. That's pretty much all that I have for you today. So I think if you have any questions, please go ahead. Otherwise, thank you very much. And again, if you're not exhausted, you're not doing it right. Thank you. 1, 2. The timeline was quite a long time. I mean, it's probably been, I don't know, a year since this started out. I was the technical lead for the first 2 versions of this product, and then I stopped being technical lead. So I'm probably not the person who can fully answer that question. But we have a culture, I think a pretty good culture at Cornell, of sharing information. Wasn't a problem for us to get access to this information from a permissions point of view. The problem was technically how do you get access to it? And that, to me, is just that's just a resource issue. I don't know, does that answer your question, kind of? So in the beginning we had one developer, and then we outsourced this to a third-party company. So we wrote a specification to a third-party company, and one of the things that I found a very successful way of keeping the price down with companies that I work with who I outsource things to is I have a very detailed specification. So we have a sort of a mock-up, and we say, this works, this kind of does what we want, not, but you need to fix it and, you know, do all the corner cases. Otherwise, when people come in and quote, they'll like make up some outrageous figure because they want to insulate themselves as well, right? So having a very detailed scope, and we went right so far as to write like a, I don't know, it was a long document, which is, you know, when a person clicks this button and this happens, then this is what's going to happen. You know, this is the test you're going to do, sort of test-driven development style. This is the test you're going to do. This is a part of the test. And it was, I mean, it was mind-numbing to write that stuff, which mostly I wrote, but it worked. So what we did was we had a detailed spec and we outsourced and paid a company, I think we paid them $70,000 in the beginning to do this. Like 70,000 bucks, I think. That's a good question. So I started from sort of just asking people, hey, can you open it up? And that didn't go anywhere. So now I'm working with the legal department to get it open sourced. Cornell is kind of nervous about that sort of thing for reasons that I don't really understand, I must admit. As a sort of a tech person, that's kind of a weirdness to me why that's the case. But I mean, it's not going to happen in the next month, I would say, because that's just how fast Cornell moves, which is not very fast. The goal is to get it open sourced and get it out there. I particularly want to get it. We have a neighboring college across the hill called Ithaca College, and I really want to get them to use it because I think there's a lot of value for them, and they've expressed a lot of interest in it. I think it is a tool that is, I think it works, you know, and it solves a need. It solves just one niche need. I mean, you need lots of other tools as well, but it does solve that need, you know. Any other questions? Yes, sir. One, two. Yes.
So do you think URL can be used to replace some of the other asset management tools, or is it meant to supplement?
So it's meant to supplement, but we actually, so I have, what I wanted to do is use it to replace some things, because it does have a repository function in it, like a repository of last resort, if you like. So you can add stuff directly to it if you want to. And actually, I mean, as a domain-specific knowledge base, I think it's actually kind of a cool tool, right? Any specific domain, doesn't have to be marketing, any specific domain where you want to collect information, where you have more information, and where findability of that information is a problem, and you want people to be able to comment on it and, you know, socially comment on the articles and things like that and say, this is good and that's bad. I mean, it could easily be a paste bin for code, right? You can just add snippets of code to it and say, this is good code, this is bad code. So I would like it to have a wider use, but, you know, it just depends. Users cannot create a profile function, but you, as an owner of the repository, can create a waiting function. So basically what that's doing is it's just a mathematical waiting function, and it's just doing a very simple SQL query. The code is written. I actually came up with a really nice waiting function that I thought was awesome. It turns out a lot of thought has gone into that. A lot of algorithms exist for really cool waiting. So it's sort of pulled out so you can replace and put whatever function you want in there. But for now, it's just a straight linear waiting function. It's kind of an interesting, it's probably sufficient to have a linear waiting function, actually. If it gets too complicated, people kind of get confused. They want to sort of try and work out how it works, so maybe it's not a bad thing that it was just that simple. So no, you can't individually change the weights of things. If you rank something a 5, you can't change how important that giving it that 5 is. And if you comment on something or you relate two items together, you can't change the weight of that. But if you are a administrator, you can change the weight of that, but you do it for everyone in the system. Another important thing to comment is it doesn't have, everything in the system is visible to everyone. We did that deliberately. We didn't want people to say, hey, I want to put stuff on the web and I don't have anywhere to put it. I'll just use your resource to do it, but I don't even want to show it to these people. No, we're not like a free storage place for people on the internet. You know. yes, ma'am. It is not drawing in content from social media, not from Twitter. It's only drawing in content from repositories that we have access to. I mean, it would be kind of cool to do that, but I don't think that's where the marketing organization is going to take this. I think they're going to not take it there. I mean, it could easily do that. I mean, talking to Twitter is trivial, right? I mean, it's really, really easy to talk to Twitter about this, but I don't think that's what's going to happen. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much, folks.